This is the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. Durham City Public Schools were officially desegregated in 1959. With the law on her side, an African-American woman named Margaret Turner enrolled her children at Carr Junior High, previously an all-white high school. Margaret Turner fought quietly for civil rights causes like school integration all her life. She helped break down racial barriers in Durham's hotels and restaurants in the 1960s, and she was a mentor to local youth, recruiting them to participate in the March on Washington and the fight for workers' rights in the Bull City. Margaret Turner passed away last week at the age of 93. On the show today, we'll remember her life and legacy. Joining me to talk about this civil rights hero is Beverly Washington Jones. Beverly's a retired professor of history and former provost at North Carolina Central University. Welcome to the program. So good to have
you. Good morning. Great to be here.
In an obituary published in the Durham Herald-Sun, State Senator Floyd McKissick Jr. described Margaret Turner as an unsung hero for civil rights. Give us an idea about how important Margaret Turner was to that movement.
There's no question about it. Ms. Turner was a drum major for peace, drum major for justice and civil rights. Many young people like I refer to her as the mother of the NAACP. In my youth and my young period of my life, I was very active in the NAACP and desegregation movement. And I can recall many times at St. Joseph Church, she instructed us on how to act on the picket line or how to act when we went downtown to picket and to fight for civil rights. She was a strong advocate for justice and a strong advocate that young people needed to be involved. So I view her as the mother of the NAACP for those in Durham, as well as even on the national level. She attended all of the NAACP meetings. And if you've ever seen a picture of Ms. Turner, you would know it would be a straw hat with all the buttons and that came from the NAACP convention. So in essence, those that knew her basically respected her role.
We take it for granted, and I think we think it's intuitive that if you're going to start a movement like that, you really want young people involved. But that wasn't necessarily the case. Some of the leaders in that movement, Dr. Martin Luther King in particular, was worried about bringing young people in and resisted. Was it a fight to convince people that this movement needed a mother and it needed children?
Not really. I think that under the leadership of Floyd McKissick and others, it was very important that young people be involved in the movement. Important because the future leadership of the African-American community, of the nation itself, would depend on persons who understand what the struggle was all about. And there were many of us, no hesitation whatsoever in terms of being involved. I'm from a family of 11 children, and my parents were not concerned when they were told, are your children downtown in the jailhouse because they've just been locked up? But in essence, we understood what the movement was. But later in life, when you began to reflect about it, you really didn't realize that every time you walked downtown, you were putting your life on the line.
And you just referred to Floyd McKissick, of course, Floyd McKissick Sr., who was head of the NAACP here at the time. And she took his place, in fact, as part of the youth coordinator.
That's correct.
Is that right? But she got started in this even earlier because she worked here, right here in this building, right, American Tobacco?
That is correct.
And she was interested in workers' rights even before she got involved in the civil rights
movement. Right. That's correct. She worked at American Tobacco Company. I've interviewed her several times in terms of experiences, and she basically indicated that there were definitely injustices. This was the Jim Crow period, working on separate floors of Liggett and Myers, and they worked in what was called the area that was called the Leaf Department, which, of course, was the dirty work that had to be done. And to a large degree, African-Americans did not work in the cigarette side of American Tobacco Company. And that was very similar to what took place at Liggett and Myers also. But later, she did get that opportunity to work in the cigarette side. She and a large number of African Americans, she being the only woman, sued American Tobacco Company for not allowing them to move forth in terms of economic mobility and job positions. So she was definitely a fighter. And many times the foreman and others would say, don't talk with her because she is just crazy. Don't talk with her because you'll get contaminated. So they would basically tell anyone who comes into American Tobacco and working on that particular floor, don't have conversations with Ms. Turner.
Well, you had a conversation with her, as you said. You had the opportunity to interview her. In fact, you worked on a documentary about Durham's Haytai neighborhood, and I think maybe had the last interview with Margaret Turner. Let's listen.
What the black people wanted to do, they wanted to come into the cigarette department because they had more seniority than most of the white people had. But what the company did, they changed the name of the companies from cigarette to something else, and so they couldn't come in there because they was hired for the stemmery, and the white people was hired for the cigarette. But this woman came in one day and they asked me. He said, Margaret said, how would you like to train for cigarettes, you know, catching the cigarettes, you know, on the belt, on the machine. I said, that'll be fine. I said, I thought you wouldn't ever ask me.
That's Margaret Turner from a documentary on Durham's Haytai neighborhood, produced by Victor Stone. And my guest, Beverly Washington Jones, was asking her those questions. What made her think that she could face down American Tobacco Company and the white fathers of Durham in the civil rights movement?
Well, I think that based on my interviews, because I've had several with her, Ms. Turner grew up in a family in which her parents made it very clear that you can do anything that you want to do. She was a very resilient person. She was an individual who could never take no for an answer if she truly believed this was the right thing to do. And she was also a profound person who believed that in God. She was a strong Christian. She believed that her steps were ordered by him. And I think with that combination, and then being in Durham, in which there was a what I call the Black Vanguard, Durham allowed African Americans to a large degree to speak what they needed to speak and to do what they wanted to do. And that type of climate also sort of move you to the level to say, this is wrong and I'm going to speak out and justice will be served.
Why was that true here? And was it more true here? Was it easier, or was there a better foundation here than in other cities in North Carolina?
Well, I think Durham had what we called a section called Haytai. And in that section, the leadership also believed lifting as you climb. It was a bustling area of 200 businesses. We know in Wilmington there was a similar type of community, but of course that didn't survive. So Durham basically was a very progressive area, but there were African Americans who truly believed that despite Jim Crow, no one was going to acquiesce to that and will make a difference and created institutions that were able to bring about a different type of mentality, a strong sense of racial pride and justice in terms of that. So this milieu of Durham created the catalyst. We also witnessed in terms of looking at the history of black women tobacco workers, that many of them, just like Ms. Turner, led the movement towards school desegregation, became very active in leadership positions in the church, created types of community organizations like penny clubs, collecting money in case individuals that basically died or individuals that needed support. So you had a burgeoning leadership, which was grassroots, taking place in Durham.
And did it come out of their work in the plants, in their organizing work?
I truly believe it did come out of their experiences there, and from the experiences of their resistance to the status quo and working in those particular industries, they develop a sense of what I call a feminine consciousness or a sense of leadership, a community leadership. And they transferred that to making their communities even stronger. And of course, that really also precipitated and created types of neighborhood councils and grassroots leadership for Durham.
Thank you so much for talking with us, Beverly. Beverly Washington Jones is a retired professor of history, CEO of Academic Enrichment Service Systems in Durham. She's joining us to talk about the life and legacy of Durham civil rights leader Margaret Turner, who passed away a week ago at the age of 93. Visitation is tonight at Berthay Funeral Home. That's from 6 until 8 tonight for the visitation. Funeral services are going to be held tomorrow morning at St. Mark AME Zion Church on South Roxborough Street, and that is at 11 o'clock. On the state of things, just ahead, a new movie documents the experiences of early female jazz musicians. We're going to talk with a filmmaker on the state of things from North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. Stay with us.